Hello, it's Thursday, September 14th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio. We're glad you're all tuning in today. We had a few minor glitches with the website after we came back from New York City. It seems like every year, right after 9/11, Lisa, funny things start happening to our website.
Yeah.
I don't know if it
has... Same time of year last year, right around 9/11.
Yeah, I don't know if it has anything to do with the big 9/11 World Trade Center controlled demolition signs we hold up. I don't know if it has anything to do with 9/11 evil being on the ADL hit list. I don't know what it is, but every year, right after 9/11, funny things start happening. But hopefully, we have them worked out. If you're having any trouble on your end, send us an email. Let us know what the problem is. We'll look into it, see if anything funny is going on. But we hope everything's back to normal now. Also, we just want to say thank you to everybody out there who's tuning in. We've been flying a million miles an hour here the last couple weeks. And finally trying to get back to normal, just about caught up on the emails and everything like that. So
I'm going to give everybody, again, the Controversy of Zion book. If you want to read this free book on the internet, please email me. I will send you the link. I'm on chapter 7 today, and it's just incredible. It's just incredible. You want to talk about real history, Victor.
How many pages is it total, do you know?
I'm not sure. I think it's 300,000 words.
Okay.
So, and it reads fast, but you don't want to read it fast, but it's gripping.
Right. Now, we're going to cover some news that's either been surfacing in the last couple days or so, or some things that we've missed because we've been away for the last week or so. This news item came out recently. It says, Iran states that the United States and Israel ordered the September 11th attacks. Now, this was presented by the Supreme Commander of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, and he is accusing the Bush administration and Israeli Security Services, the Mossad, for ordering the September 11th, 2001 attacks. Now, this sounds kind of similar to what some other people are saying.
Yeah.
Namely, Wing TV and a few others.
It's been said long before we started saying
right.
it. Because even in this Controversy of Zion book, it's pointed out over and over again how Israel has, throughout history, gotten foreign governments to infest and control situations and events throughout historical time.
Right. Now, this statement was made by Major General Yahya Rahim Safavi, and he was telling his military commanders that, this is a quote, the events of September 11 were ordered by U.S. officials and Mossad so that they could carry out their strategy of preemption and warmongering and unipolarization in order to dominate the Middle East. Now, this then was reported by the state-run news agency in Iran called the ISNA. And very, very interesting because also, and I'm going to post this article that I'm referring to was posted on the Wing TV homepage yesterday. And then yesterday, it's going to be posted today. I got a news item from Vinny Sammartino. It's a little video clip from Venezuela that's saying the same thing about U.S. and Israel ordering the September 11th
attack. Isn't the timing of this very interesting? Because here we have our government plotting, you know, ways to attack Iran and using this whole nuclear proliferation threat smokescreen.
Yeah.
And here you've got Iran now taking a jab back, doing what our own politicians here in the United States should have done years ago.
Right.
Tell the truth about it.
Exactly. Now, in a related story, this is very interesting. This came out yesterday. Actually, came out 2 days ago on Tuesday. That countries such as Cuba, Iran, Syria, and North Korea, they're called the non-aligned nations. What they want is the definition of terrorism to be redefined, which is very interesting because they say they want to broaden the definition of terrorism to include A, the United States' occupation of Iraq,
uh-huh,
and Israel's invasion of Lebanon. Now, they're all meeting in Cuba, and we're certainly not advocates of communism here at Wing TV by any stretch of the imagination. We're not even fans of socialism. So we don't want this to be mistaken that we're supporting communist or socialist nations, because that's the way we see things is the less federal government there is in any way, shape, or form, the better.
Right.
And, you know, when you get into socialism, communism, it's too much state-run everything. So we're not advocating these forms of government. But what they're called, the non-aligned movement, that's countries that would be characterized as the axis of evil. But what they're saying is that nations like the United States and Israel are the only ones who get to decide who the terrorists are, and I say that in quotation marks, what terrorism is, but these nations face no punishment for their own actions.
Right, no accountability.
Which would be characterized as terrorism. So we're going to keep an eye on this, and we think that it's very interesting because in this sense, they're correct. That why should only a couple nations, and then, of course, they're supported by the European Union almost always. Sometimes France jumps out of line. But invariably, it's these countries that define who a terrorist is. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be long until people who investigate 9/11 will be characterized or classified with the terrorists.
Well, I think that's already been done.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question about the first story. Has there been any response to that Iranian statement about U.S.-Israel involvement in 9/11?
Well, from the mainstream sources that I've been seeing, and every day when I do the Wing TV updates, I check all these different sources. I haven't seen anything.
Well, what's the source
in the American
of that story?
This story came from, let me grab it here, Iran Focus, a website called Iran Focus. And I guess the major general's comments were reported by Iran's state-run news agency.
But there's been no response from the Bushistas?
Not that I'm aware of. And, you know, even that, when it says state-run news agency, even then, that makes me queasy because I don't want any government, whether it's Iran's or Germany's or America's or China.
Well, bottom line, question your information no matter what the source is.
Right. But anytime you get the government involved in news and people, you know, some people say, well, at least we have freedom of the press in America. Well, if you think mainstream media in this country is free, at least free from corporate and government control, then you're very sadly mistaken. And I just posted an article yesterday, Lisa, on the Wing TV homepage about China is cracking down on foreign news services on Chinese-run internet. And what China does, how they control their news on the internet over there, is they limit the amount of internet service providers there are, the ISPs.
Make it harder for people to even get online?
Right. Well, and what they do is that if there's an ISP that's starting to provide some of this taboo information, what they do is just cut that ISP off then. So that's how China does it. And you can see all these governments from the United States to Europe. And in Europe, of course, we have control over things like the Holocaust. They're not allowed to speak about that.
Right. And here we have the Pentagon, which oversees all of our news.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a battle for control of information. And as we said yesterday when we were up at Ground Zero, I was talking to Lionel. I said, you know, as much as I disagree with the government, at least we're still allowed to go out and protest. We're allowed to hold up banners. We're allowed to voice our displeasure with these government stories. And speaking of which, we're going to talk about Flight 93 tomorrow on Wing TV. It's going to be a very interesting show. So,
I think so.
Now here, finally, I'm going to try to relate this or segue this into another story. When we were down in D.C. 2 weekends ago, I was talking to a guy who brought up a subject, and he says, what do you think of Iran's military? Do you think they're as strong and powerful as the news is saying they are? And I said, well, you know, from what I can gather, yeah. But he said, well, this guy was telling me that he read a blog recently that says that Iran's military isn't nearly as strong as reports are.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that.
And so it took a couple days, but this guy finally sent the link to the article. And here's a quote. I'm going to read a quote from the Center for Strategic and International Studies. This is from August 2006, from last month, about Iran's military. Most of Iran's military equipment is aging or second rate, and much of it is worn. Iran lost some 50 to 60% of its land order of battle in the climactic battles of Iran in the Iran-Iraq war, and it has never had large-scale access to the modern weapons and military technology necessary to replace them. So it goes on, and it has a lot of tables and so forth. It has their tanks, their aircraft, their jet craft, and so forth. And from this report, it looks like Iran is seriously lagging behind.
I have something to say about this.
What's that?
What if Iran's best weapon has nothing to do with military aircraft or weaponry? What if their best weapon is information about what happened on 9/11?
Yeah.
And what if they decide they're going to preempt any kind of attack or even act out of revenge following an attack by just blowing the whole thing wide open, like with real specific information?
Yeah. Well, here's a...
What do you think about that?
That's a very good point because...
I mean, in light of that statement that was
made.
Right,
right. And, I mean, is it... And I don't believe for a second that Iran is only developing this uranium for energy purposes. Of course, they would want to develop it, push it further, so that they can have a counterbalance to Israel's 200-plus warheads.
Yeah, and think about it. Think of where they are, and think of how Israel acts toward its neighbors. Would you want to settle for not having any kind of way to defend yourself? Look, we see what happens to countries around there, you know, that have to get groups like Hezbollah and Hamas to fight, to resist Israeli aggression.
Yeah, and I don't think any nation needs nuclear weapons, more nuclear weapons, but if Iran does develop the bomb, think how it's going to change the way the Middle East is structured. Right now, there's only one bully on the block, Israel. But if there's a counterbalance to that, even if Iran only gets a couple nukes, it's going to change the entire structure, the framework of the Middle East. And in light of this article, listen to this section. It's talking about the F-14s in the Middle East. And one report suggests that the Iranian Air Force can only get no more than 7 F-14s airborne at any one time. In contrast, Israel, for example, has 555 combat aircraft, 90% of them probably stored.
How recent is this data?
It was posted August. I think it was, I'm not sure, actually. This right here, is part of it says 1979, but I'm sure it's not from that.
What I want to know is, I mean, there's got to be newer technology that they possess, especially if Bush and them are trying to draw Syria into the picture, and Russia's in the picture. We don't know, just by going by that report,
mm-hmm.
what they actually have. I think that needs to be said. If that's as old as this guy who sent it to you, he hasn't sent you anything
No follow-ups on it now. Okay.
Just want to make that clear.
Here's a quick story, since we're talking about 9/11 conspiracy theories and Israel's involvement. This is from the Jerusalem Post. And it says, the lie that just won't seem to die, Jews behind 9/11. And what they're saying in this is they characterize all of this information as nothing more than an urban myth. An urban myth.
Well, all I have to say to that is you must read Controversy of Zion. You must read this. And you will laugh at what he just said right out of the park.
Yeah. And
it blows it right away.
One of the spokesmen that was quoted in this article is none other than Chip Berlett. One of the famous Libby Libs who writes for all the alternative left-wing sources. And, he's a major shill in this movement. And what they're saying basically in this article is that if you link 9/11 to Israel, then you're a neo-Nazi, you're a white supremacist, mm-hmm. you're an anti-government zealot, or a Holocaust denier, or you're associated with Lyndon LaRouche. I mean, you see how they
Boy,
just...
Boy, that's a stretch, huh?
They marginalize all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then, it seems like Chip Berlet is one of the volunteer editors on Wikipedia. And
well, now that's very interesting, considering how certain information is handled on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Certain information isn't allowed to stay on Wikipedia.
Well, one of the people responsible for that is Chip Berlet. Chip Berlet, because he says that any time any Israel 9/11 information goes on Wikipedia, he's right there to promptly excise it
now,
from
you know,
the encyclopedia.
I know some people in Europe who are going to be very interested in that if they don't know that already.
Yeah. And he says, this is a direct quote from Berlet, he says that it requires constant attention. So there's people, and at least
monitoring
that, this confirms what
That's
we've been saying forever, is we say that there is these, well, he calls himself a volunteer editor, but I take that with a grain of salt, but we've been saying
kind
forever.
Kind of reminds me of the Rendon Group article in the Village Voice, was it, or Rolling Stone?
Rolling Stone,
yeah.
But we've been saying forever that there's paid shills out there on the internet that have constant attention to what is going on in the chat rooms, on these different posting boards, in Wikipedia. And I don't trust Wikipedia for a second.
Like we said, you never see the shills kicked out or banned from a shill forum or chat room or discussion board. Likewise, you never see shill information removed, deleted, or censored off of a shill website.
Right. Yeah. So.
And you can't rely on the information on Wikipedia. It's just too easily messed with.
Yeah, and then you have all these different buzzwords that they're using to marginalize or worse, castigate people.
And if ever there was a reason to be even more wary now, the name Chip Berlet.
Yeah, and you know when I first heard that name was associated with Mike Rupert. Remember when they had, and I think, in all honesty, they were staged battles. Mm-hmm. Myself, remember Rupert come out and say, oh, Chip Berlet, he attacked me on Amy Goodman's show. I think this was nothing more than a controlled opposition battle.
Mm-hmm.
And because both of them did everything in their power to deflect attention away from Israel. So, you know, whenever you see that name, Chip Berlet, be wary. Prick your ears up because something's going on. Now, here's an interesting article, Lisa. Has George Bush gone over the edge? Is he crazy? And
we've been asking that for years. I mean, has anything changed?
Well, there's people that actually think that Bush that he's sliding into a full-fledged mental breakdown.
Why? And, what did he do?
Well, I mean, one thing he does is, and this is bizarre, is that he farts in front of the aides in the West Wing. I mean, like, in front of them deliberately, purposefully, farts in front of them. And, I mean, that's just strange. Now, that doesn't mean that he's insane. But what I picture him as is one of them Yale Skull and Bones men with the silver spoon in his mouth that never had to grow up beyond an 18-year-old. Now here he is 60, he just turned 60 years old.
You know, I read this the other day, but I thought it was a joke.
No. And here he is 60 years old. We know he's 60 because we saw him on Larry King, you remember, with his wife?
Yeah.
About a month ago, and he had just celebrated his 60th birthday. And here he is walking down the halls of the West Wing, and he's still farting. I mean, it's flatulence. I mean, you know, that's the polite word. But why?
I wish you would have used the polite word from the beginning.
Why try to? We're not gonna, you know, coat this in any ways. He farts in front of people. He's a pig. He's an 18-year-old skull and bones frat boy.
He's a gas bag.
Yeah, that hasn't moved beyond.
I guess the president hasn't heard of Beano. It's kind of mind-boggling. Yeah.
Some of the other things.
How do they react when he does that?
Well,
does he have a little health problem there?
God almighty.
Is he just eating too damn well?
Who knows? But you know, some of the other things is, you remember when he was at the G8 conference and he was sitting there with Tony Blair, Bush and Blair, and they left the microphone open and they're talking, they're calling the different guys sweetie and cutie and stuff like that. Remember? Then he gave someone an impromptu massage at the G8 conference. Yeah, and I don't even know, a foreign leader. I can't remember who.
He gave a guy a massage?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was a guy or a woman, but they were talking about that at the AFP conference and saying, like, how embarrassing this is for an American leader to be doing all these things. And they say that all the foreign leaders just laugh at the guy. He's a joke. He's a buffoon.
He's a horn tutor.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing that we have to be careful with articles like this is, are they deliberately trying to make Bush seem like he's nuts, that he needs psychological help, so that all blame...
So he's not held accountable.
Well, or no. That all blame is being directed on Bush, like he's really calling the shots, but he's just nuts, okay?
Uh-huh.
And in this article, they have all these psychiatrists, and they're evaluating George Bush to see what's wrong with him. But, as we've said many times, the biggest decision they're allowing Bush to make is what color socks he's wearing and what color or what kind of cereal he has in the morning. So be careful of these kind of articles, because I do think the guy's half off his rocker. But we can't be like the Democrats that are putting all the blame on Bush and just saying, well, look how he's screwing everything up because he's nuts. Well, they're not letting him do anything. They know that he's crazy.
Well, at least he's entertaining himself, huh?
Yeah, if nothing else, he's containing...
The sky is falling and Bush just goes around chirping all over the world.
Well, and you know, when you look at it, here's a guy that has no qualifications...
Right, no skills.
...whatsoever to be in the executive office.
Right.
Here's a guy that, you know... Well, I read something a couple weeks ago that when he was on his little vacation down in Crawford, the book he read was Albert Camus' The Stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the most bizarre choices ever, if he did actually read it. But when they asked Tony Snow what he was reading, he said The Stranger by Albert Camus, which is one of the most famous existentialist novels ever.
Can you even imagine Bush reading?
Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of hard to even watch him reading off a teleprompter when he does his little speeches.
Well, and when he gave his 9/11 speech the other night... And I was watching it with Michael Langston. Lisa didn't even come in. She couldn't even bear it. But he starts off, and the first thing he says is, he talks about the 19 Muslim hijackers, and he stumbled over them words.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's reading right off a teleprompter. But when he did so, that's very indicative of someone who's lying. When they stumble over their words, especially the first words of a speech, because in his own mind he knew it was such a lie, this whole hoax about the 19 Muslim hijackers, and that's how he started his speech.
He's never come across as really comfortable with speaking, no matter how much he's coached or how much he smirks and tries to be, you know, his little arrogant...
Yeah. Well, after that, he started reading, and he didn't fumble anymore as badly. But I said to Michael, I says, don't you think they could make him somehow make it appear less like he's reading directly off a teleprompter? Now,
I think they only have so much to work with comes to George Bush.
Yeah. And here's a good little side note story is Bill Clinton. Once when he was given one of his State of the Union addresses, and we're no fan of Bill Clinton, none whatsoever. But right before the speech started, his teleprompter screwed up. It wasn't working. Nothing was scrolling.
Uh-huh.
So for the first 11 or 12 minutes of his speech...
He had to ad-lib.
Ad-lib, impromptu. And not a single person, other than the few that knew that he was even winging it. Now, George Bush...
Well, you know what it is? Clinton's so used to telling creative lies and fabricating entire scenarios and stories.
Or, i.e., bullshitting. They didn't have any trouble at all. But George Bush, when he was sitting there in the Oval Office reading off the teleprompter, it was so painful to see him just reading off of this and not even making it a guise that he's reading.
He hasn't even mastered the art of pronouncing words. You know, nuclear. How many years has it been? If they haven't been able to teach him how to properly say that particular word, what makes you think that he's skilled at doing anything else?
Yeah.
Like reading Albert Camus.
So, I'm glad you brought that back up, because here's what this novel's about. It's about a man who gets informed that his mother dies, okay? And he's so nonplussed by this information, so unmoved by it, that he was like, well, what does it matter if she lives, she dies, whatever. He goes to the funeral, He's sitting there smoking cigarettes. He doesn't weep at all. It just has no effect on him whatsoever. Then he meets up with these shady characters. And then actually after that, he goes out the same day and has sex with his girlfriend or a prostitute or whatever, just completely unmoved by it. Then, as the story unfolds, he meets up with some shady characters. They go down to a beach, and the main character, Mare Salt, takes a gun and shoots an Arab on the beach, okay? Shoots him in cold blood. He gets arrested, gets taken to trial, and has no reaction to it whatsoever. He says whether he lives, dies, who cares? Just completely unemotional about the entire affair. Well, the courtroom and the judge and the lawyers and the media are actually more outraged at Mare Salt. Not that he killed the Arab, but that he has no emotional reaction to it. He just says, who cares? Then they sentence him to death, and he's like, oh, well, all right, I live, I die, I'm going to die anyway, so what's it matter if I die now or in 40 years? Mm-hmm. And that's basically the theme of the story. It's called The Stranger. And this is the book that supposedly George Bush is reading. Now,
what an odd choice.
Yeah, psychologically, Lisa, what do you think that means? Like, why would he, he could read a book about goats, you know, like he did down at Booker Elementary School in the morning of 9/11. But Albert Camus, The Stranger, what do you think would prompt him to suppose him? And why would the White House admit that this is the book he's reading?
Well, maybe they want people to think that he's actually smart, that he knows how to read words with more than one syllable in it. I don't know.
Yeah, and reading Camus, though, I've read tons and tons of Camus. Camus wrote a book called The Myth of Sisyphus, which is actually where I got the name for our press, Sisyphus Press. And, of course, Sisyphus was the guy who rolled the boulder up the mountain unceasingly because that was the sentence given to him by the gods. But very, very interesting. Now, lastly, before we close up...
Did Bush get it?
I'm still wondering if he actually read the book, but why would they say this is the book he's reading? And if
they don't want everybody to know he's reading the Goat Book Part 2.
Yeah. If anybody out there has any thoughts on this, why Bush is reading existentialism, let us know, because it actually did pique my interest quite a bit. And last but not least, there's a senator, I think Russ Feingold, came out and said that nobody should say the words anymore, Islamo-fascism. Now, he's far, far, far left. And I'm not really concerned with Russ Feingold. I don't care about him. But he does have a good point, because the word fascism is being so misused these days that it's amazing.
Like the word conservative.
Yeah, another good point. Because fascism is nothing more than the corporate takeover of government. That's what the true definition of fascism is, that a corporate body or many corporate bodies take over the government. Now, Mussolini was a fascist, had a fascist government, and Mussolini always bragged, well, at least the trains are running on time.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime the government runs anything, look at Amtrak, look at the post office, and I know the post office because nearly every single day my head explodes when I go to the post office. It's largely bureaucrats, inefficiency, people can't get fired because they have the postal union.
Ineptitude.
Right.
Paid ineptitude.
But what Mussolini did with fascism was have private corporations take over the railway and essentially the government overall. And he said, at least the trains are running on time. Call me a fascist, but they're going to be on time. Now, how does fascism integrate itself with the religion of Islam? So
I think they're just trying to give words new definitions.
Right.
I mean, and they do. It's just like Animal Farm.
Well, yeah.
they're rewriting the definitions, the meaning of words.
Yeah, and it's so preposterous because what corporations have taken over the religion of Islam or even extreme Islam? I mean, it's unbelievable how these two words are linked together. Now, Feingold was saying we shouldn't say it because it's an affront to, in his words, the peaceful religion of Islam. What I'm saying is they're misusing the word, mischaracterizing it.
It's just a combination of words that really doesn't mean anything. It's essentially meaningless, and they're trying to affix a meaning to it that isn't applicable to what the words themselves mean when you take them separately.
Right, it's a total misnomer. And I know why.
They're trying to give you a visual.
Right, right. And yeah, that's exactly why the neocons are doing it, is it's a buzzword. Mm-hmm. And it has very definite...
It's a trigger word.
Yeah, and it has definite connotations going back to World War II, the Nazis, Mussolini, and so forth. And it was the same exact thing that George Bush did on his September 11th speech Monday night. He says, well, you know how the World War II generation stepped up. They went and fought this war in Europe against the Nazis, and they saved this country, and they made it what it is today. And then he says, do we have what it takes today to do so? Basically,
he's trying to goad people.
Right. And he's saying, are we man enough to fight the Islamo-fascists, or is this generation just a bunch of pussies that won't go fight for the neocons?
Well, Islamo-fascists are non-existent, so I guess he wants us to be man enough to fight a non-existent enemy.
Well, just like we're fighting the non-existent Orwellian perpetual enemy of Osama bin Laden.
Right. Why don't we rise up and fight the real enemy?
Yeah, exactly.
The one that wears the big red tie on television.
And actually, that's funny you bring that up, because Lisa was back here in the office, okay, back here in the studio, when Bush's speech was on. And a couple minutes into it, I said, hey, Lisa, come here and look at something. So she comes out, and she knew Bush was on. She didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I says, look at the TV. And she says, what? I says, look at the tie George Bush is wearing. Take it from here.
He has this big, fat, red tie on.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Victor has a big, fat, red tie. He calls it Big Red.
Uh-huh. And it's my favorite tie.
It's about the ugliest, most disgusting tie. It's horrible. It's out of style. It's probably from an old dead Catholic.
Because that's where I got...
It's just, it's hideous. I hate it. I'd like to set it on fire or hide it or something.
And so, see, that's
he
my...
He loves it.
Yeah, that's my favorite tie. And all the ties that I wear on Wing TV, I didn't go out and spend $30 a piece. We won't go
Everybody can tell.
Yeah, we go over this St. Vincent de Paul Society. It's where all the old dead Catholics take their church, their clothes. And that's where I get my ties for like 50 cents. But one of them is Big Red, okay? And this was the exact same tie that George Bush was wearing Monday night. So
that doesn't really impress me.
No. And when I saw that, I was thinking, maybe I shouldn't like Big Red as much as I do. So, just a little inside story from Wing TV. So,
that tie is getting on.
I think here's what I'm gonna do, Lisa.
He just wears it out of spite too.
I'm gonna wear this tie one last time on Monday, and then to show everybody Big Red, and then it goes out in the backyard and gets lit on fire.
Yeah,
how's that?
Right. Right.
Anyway, we want to thank everyone for tuning in to Wing TV. Tomorrow we're going to be back. We're going to be discussing Flight 93. We're going to have an extra special guest, a surprise guest. We're going to have an article about it. And I think it's going to be a very, very interesting show to go into the weekend with. So we're glad you're tuning in.
And we'll see you on Monday.
Right, until
we'll see you tomorrow. Right. I keep thinking it's Friday.
Until tomorrow, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on.
See you tomorrow, everyone.